.com/how.
Good morning and welcome to True Talk. Stay tuned. We have an interesting show for you today. We're going to be talking about an event that is happening here in town. And then we're going to be talking with a journalist who wrote about John Bolton and his connection to Islamophobes. Stay tuned and listen to this very interesting song. It's by an Egyptian. His name is Abdul.
وقت غروب الشمس واقف على البحر بعيد عمال بحكي له واشكي له واشرح واعيد فجأة لقيتها وكنت فاكرها عروسة البحر خارجة من المية وطلتها اقوى من السحر لما شفتها قلبي دق تلات دقات والطبلة دخلت لعبت جوا دماغي حاجات لما الرق دخل قلبي رق وحليت طب هعمل ايه رحت انا غنيت امتى الحب طال قلبي ولا في الخيال عودك ده فيه اتقال موال ويا عيني يا سيدي على الايام لما تهادي قلوبنا غرام فجأة
back to True Talk. This is your host Samar Jarrah and we are live in the studio and we do have company. His name is Ryan El-Falah. Ryan is an American name, but I know what's the meaning of the last name, Al-Falah, somebody who is doing good agriculture or plants good seeds and has results. So maybe is that the reason you work with Penny Appeal USA? He's going to be telling us about an interesting event. It's called the Super Muslim Comedy Tour. I can't believe it. Muslims can do comedy. Oh, gosh. And he will tell us all about it. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning, Summer. Yes, my last name does mean farmer. And we definitely look to plant the seeds of the next generation through this organization and empowering the young and getting the recipients of our donations on their feet and independent through our different programs.
So what is, if you can tell us, how did Penny, does it mean penny, like the penny of the dollar?
Yes, definitely.
So how did it start?
So it started actually 7 years ago in London, and the US branch started in the summer of 2016. So we're fairly new, and we started with the concept of small change, big difference, hence the name Penny, Penny Appeal USA, the penny. We feel that we can get the young professionals motivated to do something great. And our mission is to eradicate intergenerational poverty through long-term sustainable solutions. And really, intergenerational really means is poverty that cycles through the generations. So you're born into it, and then your kids are born into it. And it's a cycle of poverty that just is nonstop. So we look to break that cycle, and we have creative ways to eradicate poverty.
I am looking at the website, and listeners who are interested in following us, we are live actually on Facebook /Samar Jarrah, my name. And I think Ryan Al-Falah also is transmitting live on Facebook. But you can go to pennyappealusa.org. pennyappealusa.org, and you can see the good work they do. I'm looking here, you work in Bangladesh with the Rohingya Muslims. Mm-hmm. You sponsor orphans. It takes $30 a month, which is really not, it's like maybe a couple of times visit to have coffee in one of our famous places here in town. Mm-hmm. Where else, what kind of areas, what kind of campaigns you have running?
Sure. So we have, we work domestically inside the United States, and we also work in 33 other countries. And we work in West Africa. Here in the United States, we have a really creative program that I'm really passionate about. We actually go into Title I underfunded public high schools. In these high schools, 70% of the graduates end up not applying to college. And when you actually talk to these kids, you understand the way they think, and they view college as unachievable. College is for the smart people. College isn't for me. A lot of them have part-time jobs, and they're focused on paying the bills and helping their families, and they can't think long-term. And there's no one to kind of guide them in terms of helping them with financial aid, helping them write college essays, resumes. So we actually go into these schools and provide digital literacy and give them grants so that they can purchase this technology, so that these students will eventually go to college and get a good job. That's the long-term solution. Food is a short-term solution, and a job is a long-term solution that will provide for them.
So are these students exclusively Muslim? Do they have to be Muslim in order to be helped with by your organization?
No. So we sponsored, they're all public schools. So in that concept, it doesn't have to be Muslim. We sponsored a school in Los Angeles. We sponsored a school in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we're looking in Tampa, Florida right now to sponsor a couple Title I schools. So no, it does not have to be Muslim students.
Actually, it's interesting that you're mentioning this. Yesterday, I was reading our local paper where I live in Florida, and they were talking about I live in a very small town. It's just as big as this area only. We have almost 400 homeless students. And they are trying to find mentors for them, and trying, like you said, to see if any of them will actually graduate from high school. school, and if any of them can have some sort of scholarship. So I'm glad we're doing this, because maybe I can call the Homeless Coalition in my town and tell them about Penny USA. What do they need to do, like contact the organization, or you look for these cases or areas?
So our programs department will do the research in terms of the community and whether they would be a good fit to be a recipient of the grants that we would give those schools. But I definitely help out in that process, specifically here in Tampa, because I was raised here and I know the community here.
Oh, so you're from Tampa?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about the event coming to town.
Okay. So, yeah, so we thought of, you know, why should people come to a Super Muslim Comedy Tour event, right? You know, it's funny. I've had people come up to me in New York, someone who converted recently to Islam, and they said, hey, I'm looking at your flyer, and Muslim and comedy, is that actually possible? Is that really real? Can Muslims be funny? And it's hilarious to see that people really don't think that Muslims can be funny. But one of the biggest reasons people should come out to this event is because it's a fun, family-friendly comedy night. And that's something that, you know, all families from diverse backgrounds, unfortunately, comedy in this day and age is usually pretty dirty and it's not family appropriate. And this gives an opportunity for families to have a nice, fun night. And it's also for an amazing, amazing cause, in the sense that we are actually fundraising for 30 minutes for our Orphan Kind program that invests into children that will be able to be educated in these institutions. So we're actually building villages from the ground up. We're trying to build one in Pakistan. And they actually become educated through these institutions, and they graduate when they become 18. And the goal for them is to become prosperous individuals to then come back and contribute to that society. And it's a beautiful, beautiful project. Solar-powered water wells irrigate the land there. And it's a gated community where they have a safe place to grow up and hopefully get on their feet and become independent. And it's a cycle that keeps on continuing and going.
I found 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, so about 8 people are participating.
So it's a group of different comedians in different cities. So about 3 to 4 per city, but altogether in the tour, we have 8 comedians, yes.
Wow, so we have 8 Muslim comedians. I know that we have many more. Some of them became very famous, but I'm looking at the flyer here, and it says there was a show on March 10 in New York City. How was that received by the public? I mean, only Muslims go there, because it's halal. Halal meaning lawful, meaning you will not find F words there and 4-letter words and maybe no sexual innuendos and stuff like that. I'm not sure if halal also includes no politics, but you can't be a Muslim in America and not make fun of our politics.
Exactly.
How was it received in New York?
Definitely. So New York was a beautiful, beautiful event. We actually were sold out in New York, and, you know, the majority of our attendees were Muslim. However, we did have different groups of non-Muslims come and really laugh their heart out, and definitely when we say halal comedy, I mean, we definitely, you just have to laugh at politics right now. So a lot of the comedians' material is kind of talking about you know, what's going on in this country right now as far as Islamophobia and different things in different areas.
Is it Trevina, what's her name?
Trevina Springer. Yes,
Springer. I want to play a clip. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind.
Sure. Because the one thing I will say, I got exposure to things that I wouldn't get growing up in the suburbs. I got exposed to, like, hip-hop music. Because up until then, I was so sheltered that my parents had me convinced that Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was gangster rap. Like, and Jiggy with it. It's hardcore in these streets. Like, rap battle to the theme song to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like, y'all don't know. Like, really? Yeah. Well, I was raised as a Baptist, because I'm from the South, and that's what you do. But I converted recently to Islam. Yes, I'm a Muslim. a real live one. And people are like, but what kind of Muslim are you? Are you like Muslim? Yes, I'm like, you know, I'm like regular, like as seen on TV. That kind of Muslim, but not the angry one. Come on, I'm not angry. Come on, look at my face. Not angry at all. But the thing is, because I was a convert, I had to tell my parents, right? Like, okay. So I took them to Olive Garden, because that's what you do when you have big news to drop. Come here, we're all family, right? So you can't be mad over breadsticks. Okay, like, oh, this is great. Why are we here? So I'm sitting down with my parents, like, Mom and Dad, I have something important to tell you. And my dad goes, you're a lesbian, right? Nita, I knew it, right? She's a lesbian. I told you, right? I want my $20. No, Daddy, that's not it. Seriously? No, thanks. But we still love you. Okay. That's okay. No, thanks. So I was like, Mom and Dad, I'm a Muslim. Okay. Does that mean you're going to wear the thing? It's like, that's all you're worried about? You know, my parents, they showed me that they're still, they're pretty supportive, but they showed me that they're still team, like, Fox News influenced by that. On the day of the Boston Marathon, like, my dad calls me. He's like, Trevina, did you hear about what happened in Boston today? I said, no, Daddy, what happened? There was a bombing at the marathon. I said, oh my God, Daddy, that's terrible. Trevina, do you know anything about this? Really?
So you ain't get a memo or nothing?
No, Daddy. You guys have been so much fun. I'm Trevina Springer.
And welcome back to True Talk. This is one of the ladies, or one of the Muslim comedians that will be coming to town very soon. Is it Saturday or
Sunday night?
Sunday night, March 25th in Tampa, Florida. Where?
In the USF Oval Theater.
Do we want to listen to more? Do you know how long it's? It's like 1 hour event. Can they bring their kids now that it is a kosher type of?
Definitely, yeah. So it's actually a 3 hour event because we have three to four comedians. So they can bring all their kids. It's family friendly. We would love to see them there.
Let's listen to Moses, the comic, because I liked him. I'm not sure if that's the right one I have, but let's see if that's the one.
Yes. You saw him look at her first? Can I answer? Yes. How long y'all been together?
3 years.
3 years? Okay. Y'all still like dating then. Y'all still laughing. Is it, are you in love? Yeah. Is it true love? You don't seem sure. She's like, is it? It's true love. This is my test for true love. Because true love is risky. You gotta be willing to do something. You might lose that person. Let me ask you, brother, if you know it's true love. This is my test for true love. Have you ever let one go around the room? No? Y'all not in love. Because that's how you know it's true love. You wanna know if she really loves you, fellas? When you go home tonight. And you get under those covers, you let one go. She gonna lean over and say, ooh, what's that smell? You lean back and say, true love. Well, man, because they say when you get married, you know, you start gaining weight. I started gaining a little bit of weight. And everybody always say, oh, you look happy. Only a fat person came up with that. Okay? Because I started noticing that, you know, single men, they don't gain weight like married men do. And I think I know why. Because I kept trying to diet and do things and lose weight. Everybody say lose weight. I kept trying to lose weight, but it kept finding me. And I noticed that with single men, while they don't gain weight, see, single men come home at night, they look in the refrigerator, don't see nothing that they want, and they go to bed. Simple. Married men come home at night, go to the bed, see nothing that they want, then go to the refrigerator. But I realized I was doing things wrong, right? I was trying to lose weight for the wrong reasons. I was going to the gym, but I didn't even know what machines to use. I was going to the gym, and I was messing up on a machine, so finally I got up the courage to ask a trainer, what machine do I need to use to lose weight? He asked me, he said, what are you trying to lose weight for? I said, I want to impress women, straight up. He said, you want to impress women? I said, yeah, show me which machine I need to use to impress women. He said, right this way. He walked me right outside, said, see that cash machine? Go over there and put some pins in there, that's all you need to impress women. Because they say that's the way to a man's heart, it's through his stomach. Men want to eat. I want to eat. Listen, when I went to get married to them, I sit down before I paid the dowry, I said, Liz, can you cook? She said, yeah, I can cook. And we got a dish in the States, right? I'm from Philadelphia. We got a dish, I don't know if y'all are familiar with it. Anybody ever had French toast?
Yeah.
Okay, pretty good, right? Anybody that never had French toast, let me explain how you make it. Because it's pretty difficult to mess up French toast. You take a piece of bread, you dip it in some egg, sprinkle a little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of sugar. You fry it on one side, and then you fry it on the other side, right? Simple. The morning after we got married, I went ahead and paid the dowry. She came in the room, she said, baby, you lay down, I'ma hook it up. She went out there and started making the French toast, and all my big men in the building, y'all know we eat with our nose first, right? We smell the fumes and stuff coming in, he's shaking his head, yes. I start smelling the fumes coming in, the butter and the cinnamon and the sugar, I said, my baby hooking it up. She brought this plate in the room, Bradford, and I swear to God, there was nothing French nor toast about what this woman had on the plate. It looked like it was from France on one side, but from Africa on the other.
And welcome back to True Talk. This is your host, Samar Jarrah, and you were listening to Moses. He is an African-American comedian who happens to also be Muslim. He's going to be part of an event that is taking place at the USF Oval Theater on Sunday. It's going to be March 25th, and the USF address is pretty simple. It's the U.S. Oval Theater, and it's called the Super Muslim Comedy Tour. And in the studio here, I have Ryan Al-Falah, and he is part of Penny Appeal USA. They are collecting funds for orphans in Pakistan. It's an interesting organization. I think I met young people who were like college students, and they were in Chicago at ISNA conference, and I remember they had models of water, the water wells you dig, and so many good things you do. How can people know about your organization or participate in it, especially that Ryan explained that they help high school students finish their school as well as provide them with scholarships? So if you are listening and if you are a young student in Tampa, Ryan can help through his organization. Can you tell them how
they can help?
Yeah, how they can help and how you can help them.
Definitely. So there's a couple ways that people can, you know, impact change, right? And the first way is definitely support us financially, which would be, you know, donating your money to a cause that you feel is closer to your heart in either, you know, the local community where we're going into underfunded public high schools, which is our program called Digital Divide, where they can also donate to international causes where we have orphan villages and emergency response. But also if they're college students and they don't have that much money and they don't feel like they can donate, they can actually volunteer with us and become part of involved with their local community and impact change locally by volunteering their time once a month with a local nonprofit organization and a church, and we feed the homeless every single month, once a month. So,
I think we have Moses on the phone. Good morning, Brother Moses.
Morning. Good morning. How's everybody?
We're very good. Did your wife learn how to make French toast, or she's still?
Absolutely not. The French toast is still from France on one side and Africa on the other. But you know, she does other things well.
And so. You have kept her. You didn't divorce her or marry another woman.
No, we didn't. We didn't divorce. We're still. Actually, this is our 10th year. Alhamdulillah.
MashaAllah, you have a license as a Muslim to marry another three. But I think it's too much trouble with one.
That's way too much trouble. Actually, because she has three different personalities, so it's like four lives.
Okay, that's a good one. Because my husband says, you know, he loves. Everything about Islam except the fact that he has the license to marry another woman, and he says he's not crazy. So tell us, Moses, is it easy to be a comedian and a Muslim together at the same time?
What's funny is I've been called an oxymoron because I've been told that, you know, you can't be a Muslim and a comedian, which is completely, you know, ridiculous. But I think it's easy for me because it's just authentic to who I am. You know, I'm a Muslim. I'm funny. I've always enjoyed making people laugh. And there's a market there for Muslim comedy. It's like for Muslims to be able to go out and have halal entertainment and enjoy ourselves and be jovial. So before, when I was doing, I guess, quote unquote, Muslim comedy, I felt like that's when I was, you know, out of my element and compromising integrity. And ever since I've been kind of doing this market, this is authentically me.
And how do people take you and take your jokes? Do you make fun of, like, our culture or different cultures or Islam or anything? How do people?
I think it's well received. I don't necessarily think we're making fun of the cultures. I think that, especially with me, it's very universal concepts of marriage and relationships and parenting and kind of just highlighting all the different nuances and things of culturally, but universally as well. So the reception has been great, actually.
I think I saw something, a clip about you and your kids. You always bring them along with your jokes, something about death and life.
Well, I do a joke about bedtime, you know, and as far as kids kind of stalling for time to go to bed. So every night, even though it's the same routine every night, my children act like, you know, they've never heard of bedtime before. And one of the questions that they always ask me is, you know, what happens when you die? So I always explain to them, you know, if you're good, you know, Allah sends you to heaven. If you're bad, Allah sends you to hell. And then he, you know, says, no, I mean, what happens when you die? So he's not really concerned about what actually happened. He just wants to know what's going to happen when I'm gone and if they can kind of have all of my things.
Wow, that's interesting. How often do you go on tours or you do stand-up comedy?
Well, I do probably full-fledged, full-length tours, maybe two or three times a year, where I'm gone for 2 weeks at a time or more. And then throughout that, we have just kind of like one-off bookings and things. So comedy is all I do. That's my full-time job. So I get to make people laugh for a living. So this is like the best, you know, this is like the best profession ever, right?
I hope so, because everything I do in America is for free. So I hope you are getting paid. I mean, I'm the only immigrant who works so hard, and everything almost I do is for free. Like, I was building a home for the Habitat. I love it, but it's for free. I do this show for the past 15 years. It's for free. I'm still waiting for this opportunity. Maybe I should be a stand-up comedian.
I think you need to not build a home for the Habitat, and you can build a home for Moses, and then that way you can get paid. No skills over here. I got you.
Okay. Moses, are you excited about coming to Tampa? Have you been here before?
I have been there several times, and Tampa is incredible. The market, the people are just so receptive and appreciative of just the art of comedy. So I'm very super, super excited to be coming back. I was just in Tampa probably maybe about 2 months ago or so, and it was amazing. So I'm super excited for the tour.
I'm curious to know, is it different to be talking or doing stand-up comedy to mainly Muslim crowd versus mainly non-Muslim crowd? Do you change anything in your script?
No, that's what I was saying before. It's like, it's so great that universally, I think the same set that I'll do at a super Muslim comedy show is the same material that I'll do if I go to the Laugh Factory or the Punchline Comedy Club or the Improv Comedy Club, because I try to keep the material very universal. It has cultural influence because I just can't get away from that. I'm an African-American Muslim. However, the concepts of you know, marriage and relationships and family and courting and different things, I think, are things that in any culture, race, religion, people kind of gravitate towards. So it's very much where I can kind of interchange between those different markets.
I want to thank you, Moses, for being on True Talk, and I want to thank Ryan for being on True Talk. Ryan is a representative of Penny USA, a very great foundation that is collecting funds to help kids all over the world, including here in Tampa. You can watch this Super Muslim Comedy Tour this coming Sunday, March 25th, Tampa, Florida, U.S. Oval Theater. When we come back, we're going to be talking to a gentleman who wrote a very interesting piece long time ago, actually, in maybe last year, about John Bolton, who just became our national security advisor, and his connection with Islamophobia. Let's go back to the song Talad Da'at. It's an Egyptian song, a very popular one, and we're going to be right back. I'm going to open the phone lines, hopefully, after we talk to this journalist. This is WMNF Tampa.
وقت غروب الشمس واقف عالبحر بعيد عمال بحكيله واشكيله واشرح واعيد فجأة لقيتها وكنت فاكرها عروسة البحر خارجة من المية وطلتها اقوى من السحر لما شفتها قلبي دق تلات دقات والطبلة دخلت لعبت جوا دماغي حاجات لما الرق دخل قلبي رق وحنيت طب هعمل ايه رحت انا غنيت امتى الحب طال قلبي ولا في الخيال عودك ده فيه اتقال موال ويا عيني يا سيدي على الايام لما تهادي قلوبنا غرام فجأة كان قلبي طالع كسبان رحت وقلت لها ان انا والهان امتى الحب طال قلبي ولا بخال حبك ده فيه اتقال
And welcome back to True Talk. This is your host, Sama Jarrah. I have on the phone with me Ellie Clifton, who is a journalist and writes in an interesting blog. But what caught my attention is an older article of him. He wrote it December 14, 2016, about John Bolton's cozy relationship with anti-Muslim hate groups. And did you expect, Ellie, that soon we will be talking about him as a national security advisor to the president?
Well, and thank you for having me. I suppose that it's less surprising that he's the national security advisor than the undersecretary of state, considering that, the deputy secretary of state, which was what he was originally being considered for, because he probably couldn't have gotten confirmed through the Senate for that position, and in his national security advisor role, he does not need a Senate confirmation. That said, yes, it's very surprising, especially, you know, to dive a little bit deeper here and to go away from his alignment with anti-Muslim hate groups for a moment. The president's base and a very big part of his message while running for president was that he was not going to make the same mistakes that were made during the George W. Bush administration in terms of committing the United States to open-ended wars, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and in criticizing how the Obama administration handled the conflict in Syria. Now, it's quite striking to take somebody like John Bolton, who played a rather central role in promoting the need for the invasion of Iraq in 2002. He promoted the weapons of mass destruction theory of why we needed to invade, which it turned out was baseless. So it's quite shocking.
Why do you think he brought somebody like him? Is it because he watches Fox News all the time and he sees them there and he likes what he says, especially about Iran? And of course, he wrote an op-ed piece where he says the legal case for bombing North Korea, although if you read it, there is nothing legal about it. I mean, it wasn't like coming from a lawyer or an international law expert to talk about why is it okay according to international law and according to our constitution to go and bomb another country.
Or according to even just war theory, it's pretty hard to come up with a justification for bombing North Korea as a preventive military measure. I think certainly there's something to be said for the argument that he picked John Bolton because of his frequent appearances on Fox News. At this point, it's pretty well established. Media Matters does a fantastic job of tracking Donald Trump's tweets in the morning and comparing it to what's being said and who's being interviewed on Fox and Friends. There's a pretty clear correlation there, and they can even identify when it is that he recorded it on his TiVo and is watching it on a bit of a delay. So I think that there's no question that one of the key sources of information for this president is through Fox News, specifically Fox and Friends in the morning. And John Bolton's frequent appearances on there, I'm sure, played a role in him being chosen by this president. But I think there's also another aspect here, which is that Donald Trump likes people who are combative. He likes people who offend and who rile up what he perceives as being sort of the mainstream media and the consumers of it. And John Bolton has a history of doing that, possibly through his ties to extremists. Such as anti-Muslim hate groups, or in his knee-jerk reaction that you know every single international problem facing the United States should be solved through military force.
Why do you think he's going to advise when it comes to Iran and the nuclear deal? Is it what he talks about, that it has to be totally cancelled? Iran seems to be a very important issue, not only for John Bolton and the right-wing people, but also some, sadly, many countries in the Arab world who favor a strike on Iran.
It's pretty hard for me to imagine that John Bolton would be promoting anything other than immediately having the United States leave the nuclear deal. A reimposition probably of nuclear-related sanctions that would be in clear violation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And I think that probably the bigger question at this point in our minds shouldn't be how the United States will be responding or acting going forward, because unfortunately I think we have a pretty clear picture of that. But the real question should be how the European allies in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action are going to be responding in turn. Are they going to try to find remedies to bring the United States back into compliance, which I think is probably wishful thinking on their part, or are they going to try to move forward with their own negotiations with Iran with their own inducements to try to keep Iran in compliance?
If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF, and I'm talking to Eli Clifton, who is a journalist. He wrote a very interesting article, December 14th, if I may, Eli, to go back to that, that John Bolton was a chairman, actually, of Gatestone organization, and I went, spent most last night going through it, and some of the things that are there are total fabrications about stories that are taking, like Islam taking parts of Sweden, or Muslim immigrants, they go into public swimming pools in Sweden and just rape everybody that is underwater. I mean, some stories are just fake news. I hate to use that. But can you tell us a little bit about his fascination with some of the famous Islamophobes of America? Like, can you please?
Of course. And I think Gatestone, while, you know, you're absolutely right, that it seems very kooky when you read the stuff there, and just you don't even need to look too far to realize that these are fabrications. It is worth noting that Gatestone, serving on their board, is Rebecca Mercer, and that Rebecca Mercer contributed money to them. So the ties now between Gatestone and this White House via John Bolton and via Rebecca Mercer, it really does bear some closer look at what the message is that they've been trying to convey. And I think the broader message coming out of Gatestone, besides these fabrications and just sort of casual bigotry against Muslims and immigrants, is there's an anti-refugee component to it. And that interest, or Bolton's softness for that argument, I think comes across as well in his alliance with two really outspoken, very crude anti-Muslim advocates. One of them is named Pamela Geller, and the other is Robert Spencer. And these are two people who played a pretty central role in pushing the so-called Ground Zero Mosque theory about, now, 8 or 9 years ago, suggesting that the Islamic Community Center in Lower Manhattan was some sort of a victory mosque over the former World Trade Center site and part of a Muslim plan to sort of dominate, which was gained a surprising amount of media attention at the time, considering, again, how baseless this was in fact. And Bolton is so close to Geller and Spencer that he even wrote the foreword for their book, which was a surprisingly... it wasn't that surprising, the book, but the things in it were surprising, considering who was writing it. It's very much with them, where they talked about, among other assertions, that they furthered their theory that Obama was undercover Muslim. They came to the defense of so-called birtherism, the movement adopted and encouraged by Donald Trump, which spreading the theory that Obama was not a natural-born U.S. citizen. And they repeated the baseless claim that Obama held Indonesian citizenship. All of these, of course, are baseless when you in the fact, but they have a large following in the far right and in sort of a conspiratorial mindset toward both Muslims, towards Barack Obama, and generally a fear of immigrants and the other. And to see the new national security advisor for this administration having aligned himself so closely with these people is it's troubling, to say the least.
Ali, Muslims who I was tweeting to, like I tweet in Arabic, and I was trying to explain John Bolton and his past, but also his association with Pamela Geller and these Islamophobes, they ask me the question, is it like because he is a fundamental Christian, is it explained in the context of a clash of civilizations, or is it only a way for them, like through Islamophobia, they create an enemy, and therefore they can justify their lust for power and desire to have wars and expansion. I usually try to explain things in terms of political science and international relations, but you know, people on the other side, they only see it from the prism of Christianity versus Judaism versus Islam, Jews, Muslims, Christians. How do you explain, why would a guy like him be so in bed with people who are very questionable when it comes to their scholarly work, let's put it this way?
Well, I think in the case of John Bolton, I think that the analysis that you put forward and that people are posing to you about putting this in some sort of a religious context or in the framing of clash of civilizations, it is sometimes a useful one, and there are certainly policymakers and activists who buy into that worldview, or at least come out of it, even if it shapes them. In Bolton's case, I'm not so certain of that. I think that a clue as to to what motivates him might be found in some reporting that just came out today. I believe it was the New York Times that broke the story talking about how Bolton's Super PAC was an early client of Cambridge Analytica and using their Facebook data, which is now highly controversial. And supposedly the things that Bolton wanted to advocate for and to influence potential voters for using his Super PAC involved sort of just, you know, embracing a militaristic nationalism, a willingness to use military force more quickly and more readily. And I think when you look at John Bolton's career, it's been one of trying to promote conflict and of using U.S. military force as the first and foremost solution to any problems, be it economic, security, geopolitical, facing the United States. So I think that in his case, it's sort of the best I can tell is that this is somebody who really likes the idea of America throwing its weight around through military force. And as for some notion of a clash of civilizations or his views being shaped by fundamentalist Christianity in some way, I don't really see it. And that's probably a good thing to look at is look about what he talks about in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely hawkish on North Korea, and nobody's really been able to promote some sort of a religious basis for hawkishness toward North Korea. This is a guy who wants to have a war.
And Ali, how do you think he will work with White House Chief of Staff John Kelly?
Poorly. the early reporting was that John Kelly had previously tried to keep Bolton away from Donald Trump, had tried to prevent them from having conversations, tried to prevent John Bolton from coming to the White House. Obviously, that didn't work out so well. But John Bolton's reputation and his track record is that he makes enemies faster than he makes friends. And I don't think there's any question that he's going to be butting heads with not just John Kelly, but a number of senior White House staff, let alone the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who probably hold John Bolton in very low regard.
I have no idea how Trump got to like his big mustache, because it's written in the book Fire and Fury that he would not hire him because of his mustache. I'm not sure what.
Right, but if that's your only problem with John Bolton, it probably means something as well.
I want to thank you, Ali Clifton, for being on True Talk. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. To our listeners out there, I'm not sure if you have anything to add to this idea of John Bolton becoming the National Security Advisor. 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. I will take your phone calls. We have about 11 or 12 minutes. I will take them as they arrive. If you have any, as I receive them, if you have any comments, if you would like, if you think there will be a war on Iran or North Korea or actually Cuba. I was also reading some of what he spoke about John Bolton was that he thinks if we bomb Cuba, we might end, the issues there. And of course, a war on Iran, I think, is going to be a disaster. If anybody thought that the war on Iraq created ISIS and Daesh and all the mess that we have in the Arab world, trust me, going to Iran has nothing to do with, it's not at all similar with what happened in Iraq. The Iranians are more, will rally behind their leadership and their government, and it's not going to be an easy war. You can't just go in, bomb them, and expect the Iranians to sit back and smoke shisha. They're going to retaliate, and I don't see a very bright future coming in the region if there is any attempt to bomb Iran. I'm not sure why they want to bomb Iran to begin with, but again, 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. What do you think of the John Bolton appointment by the president. I lost track of how many people have been, you know, hired and fired. But I think he is the third one, because it started with Michael Flynn and then McMaster and now John Bolton. The last thing I expected, really, when I was paying attention to the Gulf War and what he said about the UN, I think you were listening to Democracy Now just before then, and how he thought that, you know, you can remove a few stories of the UN building and it's not going to make a difference. Then George Bush Senior, Junior made him an ambassador to the UN, and then he had to resign because of he wasn't going to get any kind of confirmation. But now this position does not need confirmation. He is appointed by the president. Again, as I mentioned, the phone call, I mean, the number is 813-239-9663. I already have people calling, but let me remind you of an event happening in Tampa at 6 p.m. at the USF Oval Theater on Sunday, March 25th at the USF Oval Theater, 6 p.m. It's called the Super Muslim Comedy Tour. There are four people participating, and I think one of them is a woman. Let's go there and see if Muslim women have a sense of humor. David, good morning. You're on True Talk.
Hi. I was thinking if you combine the first and the third national security advisors for Trump, then you get Michael Bolton, the pop singer, who might be a better option than any of them. So I'm just being silly.
Yeah, I just saw that on while coming on the highway, that there was an advertising for him. But hey, maybe he might be less confrontational. Again, 813-239-9663 if you want to make a phone call. If not, you can always send us to dj@wmnf.org. When the news came last night, my gosh, the Twitter and Facebook was just exploded out of control. I think no matter how much we expect strange things to come out of this administration, we still think, you know, it can get worse. There is an event, actually, I forgot to mention about it. It's not an event. It's something happening in Orlando, the trial of Omar Mateen's wife. Omar Mateen is the American who killed a lot of people at the Pulse nightclub. The trial, you know, Omar Mateen was killed during that attack. 9 months later, the FBI and the government decide to put his wife on trial. His wife's name is Noor Salman, and her teachers in California testified that she has a very low IQ. And she's like in the bottom 20th percentile of the population. And she really says has nothing to do whatsoever with what her husband did or planned. So the latest news, and I'm reading here from an Intercept article, that at trial of Omar Mateen's wife, reveals a huge hole in persecution's case and deceit by persecutors. I tried to get Murtaza Hussein, who wrote the article, but he says that the judge today asked the today should be a holiday for the trial, or I mean, there is no proceedings or hearings, but he called for maybe they will be dismissing the case. Why? Because the whole premise of this case to bring this wife into trial is the fact that she cased the Pulse nightclub with her husband, that they were around going around the car, and this is how the FBI mentioned it, and this is how the judge agreed to have this case and to hear it. Yesterday, with cross-examination, the judge discovered that he himself, Omar Mateen, never went around the block to case the Pulse Club. He just went to it. He had no idea it was a gay club. and he did not do anything because he was targeting LGBT, whatever community, as the FBI said. So all this came out in the cross-examination. So the judge asks the FBI agent, you did not, why didn't you tell me that she wasn't with him, that he himself did not go around Pulse to check the place. So I'm not sure what is happening. They are now at the court in Orlando. I was hoping to be able to talk to somebody about it, but we're running out of time, actually. Let me take this one phone call. Art?
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just making a point about the Bolton appointment is just as scary as it. You know, the guy's a hawk. He's talking about bombing everybody. And, you know, it's just, I mean, you look at it and you go, you know, things just seem to be out of control. You know, is it a distraction from the Mueller investigation? Is the guy desperate? You know, is he, you know, is a strategy is like you can't remove a president in a time of war. You know, I mean, you can look at this thing a lot of ways, and I don't think any way you look at it is good.
Thanks, Art. That's interesting because, as you see, this weekend is going to be very interesting, I think, with the 60 Minutes interview. I want to thank you all for listening and tuning to True Talk. This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we're going to listen to NPR News in a moment or less.